The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. It is February the 4th and we're in 2023. You're all right, lads.
Hello, yes.
Hiya.
And Paddy says quiet, doesn't he? When he can't make it now, he's on the WhatsApp. He said, are you available? Paddy just didn't say anything.
Nothing. Ghosts us.
Just, it's like that picture of meme you see on Twitter with Homer Simpson just sneaking back into the bushes. Have you seen that?
Disappears.
He's very clear that he's always available Thursdays, though.
And we
don't record this on Thursdays. So,
no, he said every time, even if you ask on a Friday or Saturday, he says, Thursdays are good for me. Why is Thursday so good for Pat? Why are the weekends so bad for him? I don't understand.
He's a party guy, isn't he? He's a party guy.
Yeah. Anyway, we do TV tips sometimes. Before I forget, I was late night, I don't know why, I was just watching John McAfee on Netflix. I mean, it's worth watching that. He's mad, you know. The guy, antivirus software, he's amazing on computers, of course. And he's bought up for $7 billion. But in the end, his life had a downward spiral into paranoia, drinking, running from the authorities or the cartels that he thought. And it was odd, really. And he had a tattoo put on his arm saying whacked. And he said to all his followers, if I get killed in prison, I'd been whacked by the cartel or someone. And there's no evidence the cartel was chasing him. He should jump in a boat with guns and just power away. But he was killed in prison.
To be fair, I did hear the cartel are very against antivirus software. So.
They're not a big fan of that.
They hate that.
I don't think they got time for that. they're not worried about 40, 50 guys shooting up their fortresses or their houses like that, or big gun wars in the streets of Mexico or anything like that. What they're worried about is that virus software popping up saying, you need to renew your software. Right on there, kill that guy. Who created the crap?
Stop reminding me.
His name.
I know. Where is this guy? I still get that on Monty and Fred's computer. I've got an Apple, so it doesn't happen, but their computer is always, McAfee software always pops up saying, you need to renew your virus software. So that's what got the cartel didn't like that at all,
No.
Stop reminding me, man. Anyway, I just want to start by saying 2022, right? Bloody awful year investment wise. And then to top it off, both parents died my mother died on the 29th of December, don't know where I am, and my father, 22 days later, passed away as well. And very odd experience, very emotional, and I was there, and this is very odd, but I was there, both of them, held a hand as they took their last breath, and that is a very odd thing to do. It's just nuts seeing your parents pass away. And I look back at it now, I realise, my father, I don't know about your parents, I've never seen my father cry. Never. And I saw him cry.
Same.
Have you done that? I've never seen my dad cry at all. Have you seen your father cry, Steve?
No, I haven't actually.
No. And I saw my father cry twice in the last month. First of all, after my mother died, went to the funeral home and he saw her laid to rest there. He cried. It's funny seeing your father cry like that because he's very strong. My father's a workaholic. He's obviously the leader of the family there. And then again, we saw him when he's in his bedroom and he sort of realised, I had to point out to him, he started slurring, I think it was a brain tumour in the end he had, and I pointed out to him, it's probably a brain tumour, and he just had a moment of realisation, and he sort of looked at the window and he said, I think cancer's got me, isn't it? Because he's had cancer four times, and last time he called us, he said, I've got good news and bad news to me and Megan. I said, what's the good news? He said, my mum had a good day today, in the residential home. And then he said, the bad news is I've got cancer again. But he said, don't worry. He said, and he never complained about anything. He was the opposite of me. I'm a bit of a hypochondriac. And apparently, hypochondriacs last longer in life because they complain and go to the doctor more. But apparently, people are not hypochondriacs. I remember someone saying Steve Jobs was like that. He never complained. He never whinged about being ill. As a result, he died early of cancer because he didn't get it checked. My father's the same. He never had it checked. And I sort of knew he had cancer come back a year ago because I went on to Tenerife with him. And I sort of knew that. But he took his time getting it seen to. He didn't see it was a problem, And then he said, when I explained to him why he's probably slurring, and he couldn't get out of bed pretty much, and my father's never like that, he said, I've had a good life, haven't I? And they said that, and his chin started going again. That's the second time I saw him cry. I thought, wow, it's nuts. And then after that, right, the last month, I haven't been very active on anywhere, social media, even on the chat group for the investment club, because the headaches really starts after that. Have you ever heard of something called probate? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah. I know of it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, basically, it's the legal right to deal with someone's property, money, possessions, all that, after they die. Their estate, after they die, right? I didn't realise how complex it was. First of all, my mother and father had a will, but the clause in that will was, if the other survives by 30 days, then this happens. They didn't, of course. They're 22 years. I'm going to say, my mother and father, that's probably the longest time they've spent apart, that 22-day period where my mother died. And they've always been together, you know, pretty much for all their life. And so I sort that out, and you realise what a headache it is. It's nuts. You have to go through a meeting with a probate solicitor. Well, first of all, a will solicitor, then a probate solicitor, then with accountants, and because they charge through the nose as well. But as a result of this meeting, we had about so he sent me an email across just saying what we need to get, and it was like 6 points on the list. So that's not bad. And then you look within the points, and you realize there's points within the points, you know? And so now I've got, and you've got the funeral as well. So I'd been quite organized about it. I've got a list of over 50 points I need to do, 50 things I need to do. We're probably a third of the way through them. And just for example, one of those points is going through 7 years of bank statements for my mother and father.
Jeez.
Just checking for gifts and all that stuff. And whether you can, because if they're gifted, this is for inheritance tax, just in case, you know, you have inheritance tax. And it's just, my head has felt like it's in a clamp, you know, the last few, because you've got option paralysis, and you can't think of what to do. And there's been points where I've just said, right, Lola, come on, let's go for a walk, because I can't think of anything, because there's too much going on in my head, you know? Have you ever had that work?
It comes at a time when all you probably want to do is, you know, sit in a dark room and, I don't know, contemplate and think and reflect and all that sort of stuff, don't you?
I think, I think probably at the funeral, I've had a mass breakdown, because it's almost like that's delayed, and I've been emotional. I've cried, you know, a couple of times, but I mean, not a lot, because it's just now my head's full of stuff to do, you know. And then yesterday, I was at my father's house for like 2 weeks, just trying to sort things out, meeting with the banks, with my brother and stuff. And then yesterday, Nick called me, so and he showed me a video. My father's bathroom, ensuite bathroom, is leaking. It's come through the ceiling, and it looks like the ceiling's going to fall in. And you think, oh, bloody hell, bloody hell. Not a good, that's something you don't want on top, burying the air, so you don't have to deal with. And so he's up there now, and so we've got to, you know, we've got to try and sell that place. And so it's a nightmare. But do you know what I realise? All these 50 points, what it's down to is for HMRC, right? In case you have inheritance tax. And I thought, hang on a sec, right? I was thinking of my father. He's worked very hard for all of his life, and he's sort of paid income tax, he's paid stamp duty, he's paid capital gains tax, he's paid VAT, he's paid national insurance, you know, the fuel he puts in the cars, you pay tax on, you pay road tax, all that. You pay tax, they tax you in every way. You know, he's employed 10, 15 people all his life. He pays tax for them, he pays national insurance for them, he pays pensions for them. So, you know, he's given quite a lot, you know, to every point in his life. There's a way he's gone where he hasn't. Then all of a sudden you die, and they want more tax off you. You know, thinking, hang on a sec. HMRC, I remember someone saying that it's like the mafia. If the mafia tried to extort that much money from you from every angle, every part of life, essentially you'd kill them, you'd overthrow them. You know, another mafia family would come in and say, no, they're too bad, we're going to take them out. It wouldn't happen. There's so, you know, every way you turn, I've talked to a couple of people not from the UK recently on the podcast, and they said, yeah, we don't really have that, and it's not like that in this country. Inheritance tax is like a triple tax, isn't it?
How much is inheritance tax now per person in the family?
Well, you get to a threshold, which is like 325 grand. Anything over that is included, obviously, that's a house.
That's per sibling, isn't it?
Yeah, per person. So it's not the siblings, it's the people leaving it. So it's their
threshold. That's what I meant.
So that's where we get confused at the start. So you start to become a bit of an expert on this, because you read so much. I've been spending so much time on the government website, you know? I said, hang on a sec. What do you want? He's given all his life. Why are you now taking from him? If it doesn't encourage anyone to do well, to put some aside for your siblings or
leave anything.
Yeah, to leave anything. Well, you might as well just blow it all. Just blow it all while you're alive. Don't worry about your kids. Okay, you can ring fence some of it. But I thought, HMRC, I thought, His Majesty's Revenue and Customs. And I remember reading a while back, Charles never paid any inheritance tax. I thought, what? These are the guys that inherit everything. It's like the Royal Family, that's what they do. They inherit all their riches. They don't really work. They inherit everything. But yet the rule is they don't pay any inheritance. I thought, come on. Mm. And I thought, do you know what?
He'd pay his inheritance tax with inheritance, wouldn't he? So.
So I thought, hang on a sec. Yeah. I thought, hang on a sec. Yeah. Why can't I just claim to be a prince? Because I didn't vote for Prince Charles. I didn't vote for the system at all. I'm just going to proclaim to my own prince and say I'm royalty. I'm not paying any HMRC. I thought that's as ridiculous as being a prince, surely. And I just thought, when we think about it and logically break it down in the cold light of day, it's not right that you're trying to tax people after they die if they're trying to help their sons or leaving something. I just think it's completely wrong, absolutely wrong, you know, especially at a time like this. You know, parents pass away, and what you've got to deal with is whether we owe, you know, His Majesty's customs any money. No, we don't. Piss off. You've had enough.
And what is the justification for that? You know, why should the inheritance of stuff be taxed?
But haven't you had enough throughout your life? You can't do anything. Anything you do, you pay for. Whatever you buy a house, you've got to pay for the tax on stamp duty, put stuff in your car, on your car, road tax. Yeah. Even the car is double tax, you know, you got fuel duty and road tax. Income tax is everywhere. VAT on something you buy. Capital gains on things you sell. It's like, how much do you want to tax? Are you trying to kill us or what? Are you trying to cripple us with the I just say no. And I've considered moving away. I'm sorry. I'm sick of the UK. All this tax system is rubbish. But anyway, having said that, right?
Go to Belize.
Yeah, Belize. That was good.
By John McAvey,
is his nuts. He had 10 dogs. I like dogs, but he had 10 dogs on a beach right there. And 10 is too much, I think. His neighbour, so rightly so, sort of complained because they were making a noise all the time and they were attacking his parrot. And then also the next door neighbour apparently poisoned four of his dogs. And then the next door neighbour showed up dead. So, John, and they said, obviously, John's a bit mad. And so he got a boat with all his friends and full of arms and said, let's go, quick. So, that's an odd way to do it. I bet he didn't pay any inheritance tax. John McAvey, no way.
No.
He wouldn't put up with that nonsense. But anyway, stock market wise, what's your thoughts on the stock market, boys? I've got to say one thing, and this is not a boast. When I got hurt in the stock market over the last 12 months, my nature is, because I love stock market so much and obsessing, I try and find a way, you know, and I've always tried to find a way, a system, something that helps to improve the way I am. And it's been a harsh lesson for me last 18 months. But these are lessons. I mean, first of all, if you don't learn from them, they're not lessons. You know, if you carry on making the same mistakes, you'll just get worse, you won't get better. And I say to my sons all the time, you know, winners don't quit, quitters don't win. If you don't learn from something, you will not get better. And so I've sort of tweaked my strategy over the last, and I said from the 30th of September, that's the first sort of buy I made with this tweak strategy. From the 30th of September up until now, I've made 14 new investments. And up until a few days ago, I was like down on sort of two or three of them. Right now, after the rally I had 2 days ago in the market, I'm up on 14 out of 14. And it seems, I'm making this up, but I'm not completely, people who watch the webinar will know I'll show that my portfolio every week. And so I don't feel I've sussed it, but it's almost like saying what I've gone from doing is almost just sometimes if you have hope that a stock will come right, don't do that. The market is an amazing force. It's unemotional. It doesn't care about your opinion. Okay, you've got to go with the market. And what I mean by that is momentum is very important as well as fundamentals. So if you believe in a stock and it's in a downtrend, don't think I don't care and I keep putting money into it. No, don't. Go with the market. The market's telling you whether there's momentum there or not. In fact, do you know what? I'm not religious. Now, the market is my God. I listen to the market. And I say, what is the market doing? And I look at that by looking at the momentum. And that manifests itself in the volume coming through a stock and whether that's net buy or net sell volume. And that's the way you judge it.
I can say, like, because I know me and Pete probably haven't moved as much. I haven't moved at all. So I'm still very much in my older stocks. And I think you are as well, Pete. So I've obviously seen what is in your portfolio, which is completely different. And usually we would be on a fairly similar kind of buy-in level. Now, I don't plan on buying because I know you must have taken some massive losses on some of those stocks because a couple of them at the same time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I'm not going to do what you're doing because I just don't have the time to be constantly trading. And I know you wouldn't call it trading, but it is, you have kind of moved towards a closer kind of resembles trading in my opinion.
That's what someone said in the investment. These businesses I'm holding now, Steve, they're solid businesses that you can hold for years as long as the trend continues. So I've transitioned very quickly into this portfolio, but I don't intend trading these. Like I said, you know, stocks I've held, for example, I mean XP Factory.
But you are trading them because your new strategy is kind of trading. You can't deny that.
I am denying it. How am I trading? Because I'm holding them. I'm scaling in if there's momentum, if they start rising, also it's not what you buy. And of course, what you buy is essentially, you do the fundamental research. I've got a spreadsheet there. I put everything through. And then I see is the momentum. So I look at growth, value, health, efficiency, then momentum. And if momentum's not there, don't bother. And then what I do is I only scale into companies that are rising. You know, so you average up. That means your portfolio will be more leveraged to your winners than your losers. And now if you start scaling into your losers, your portfolio will be more leveraged to those losers. So it'll drag your portfolio down. So I literally 10% maximum exposure on each company. And I'm not up to that. So if a company rises by like 10%, I'll add another sort of 1 or 2% of my total portfolio to it. But once I'm at that, I'll leave it. I mean, you know, I said I've held XP Factory for like a couple of years. I mean, the first Argentex, I bought them in September. So I still hold those. I bought a few recently, yes, because the market's changed. We have had a rally in the markets.
You've traded out of some and traded into others, but you're now saying you're kind of going to go be in them for... When you say... when you've said in the past, I'm going to hold this for years. I don't know why you ever say that, because you never do. You hold it for maybe two years.
Argentex and Truefin have held for years, and G-Tech have held for years.
Argentex, you haven't. You've just bought them.
Oh, so no, I mean Truefin and XP Factory. Sorry.
Okay.
No, but I had to. This is what I thought. So I come up with this thing, right? I bought sort of K3 Capital and Argentex, and it worked out. Right, they were very good fundamental companies, and the momentum was there. And then it sort of worked. I thought, okay, listen, what do I do? Do I sit on the companies that are in downtrends and wait for them to come round over the next few years, not knowing whether they would or not, because they are small cap, you know, micro cap companies, they're unproven businesses. Or do I just get out now, take the loss and start adopting this strategy? Then the third stock I bought, it worked. I thought, okay. And so in the end, I just thought, bite the bullet, get out of the companies that don't fit your strategy, or to just sit on them. So just in the end, no, get out of them. Just get out of them, take the loss on them, and then go with the ones. And so that's why I think you should be trading. Yeah, I've transitioned very quickly from the ones that are not fitting on the momentum front. But now these companies I will hold, like I said, trends like that last for years. These trends will last. So I'm not saying holding them for years. If the trend changes, I'm out. Full stop. That's the market telling me.
Can you remind us that when you're saying the trend changes, when like the moving averages turn? So what is that flag for you that then you kind of get right of your 15 stocks, whatever you're holding now? Yeah. At what point do you get out? When do you see a trend that's turning?
Well, So all these companies got one thing in common, apart from being fundamentally good. I mean, they are profitable companies, big companies. So
they are big companies, most of them, micro caps.
I break them down into. My portfolio is not going to be more diverse. It's not just going to be micro caps, you know, which I did. No. In fact, do you remember a while back, a couple of years back, I sent out this sort of coloured sort of spreadsheet sort of makeup of sectors and what you should hold, like a fund, you know, a big company, small. And then all of a sudden I started making lots of money in micro caps, and I sort of ditched that sort of strategy and went all micro caps, all greedy. It did well for me, but then I took a hit when they downturned. Yeah. They rise faster and they sell off faster. Yeah. And I realised I've probably done... Looking back on it, if I'd stuck with that, even if I'd allocated, you know, some to micro caps and the rest to bigger caps, I'd have done better because they were less volatile. So either I should have got it quicker when the trend changed or not. So the trend I'm talking about is, first and foremost, I'll put alerts on all companies I've got alerts on about 300-400 companies. It's on TradingView. Those are companies every day. I run through the spreadsheet on one company at least every day, and I realize that's all you need, because if you put sort of screeners on, you don't have to screen for like you don't have to look through 3,000 companies that are listed. You know, they don't fit your my filters anyway. A lot of the companies are crap, or they're in debt, and so I avoid certain things like debt or companies that are making huge losses. But yeah, so I broke it down into five sections. And the big section is, like, obviously big caps. These are, and I said, these are, you know, highly cash generative companies, dividend paying. And I've got, you know, five of those. And in fact, it should be four, but I added another one. But then below that is mid caps. These are maybe not dividend paying, but they're huge growth potential. And they are sort of, 500 million to a billion. The ones that big cap are a billion plus in market cap. Then below that, I have small cap. I've got a full section of those. I've got Argentex, On the Beach, SES Group, Victoria Plumbing. They're 50 million to 500 million. And then I've got micro cap, and these are revenue generating micro caps, like XP Factory, Truefin. And then I've got below that micro cap as well. These are five stocks, and they are like G-Tech, Pullback Pharma, things like that. They're maybe they're very generating, but there's a bit of...
Have you still got G-Tech then?
Yeah. Yeah. So these are hope, hope, potential at the bottom. So there's four sections of my portfolio for those kind of fund stocks, you call, that I think companies have... No, but they have potential. I'm not going to go into rubbish. Like, I'm not in Plarium right now. And Plarium I put in that category because I think it's a very good company. Pulbeg Farms the same. Very good companies, not just, you know, oil and gas trash that don't earn any money, not that kind of stuff. But I think very good companies that have the potential to multi-bag, but they're very, so very high risk, but very high reward, potentially, you know? So it's just a mix of that. So the trend I look at is essentially moving averages, but I mean, it's obviously that's based on share price. But first of all, I'd look at whether it's above 125 moving average, above the 200-day moving average. There's got to be a hope for the cross happens, the golden cross. The 50-day, first of all, crossing the 125, I see it as a precursor to the golden cross, and then it crossing the 200-day moving average. And just looking at that. But, you know, I've got alerts on all companies like that. And I bet, so, I've been watching...
But as soon as that happened, like as soon as you're seeing that, well, if you're seeing... it's the death cross, isn't it? When it, when it turns the other way. So at that point, are you get out of the company completely or
pretty much. Well, you can do that at big caps because it doesn't matter. I mean, it's micro caps, you can't just dump. That's why as well my exposure levels are different for apart from micro caps. The maximum exposure I'll put at micro caps in these are four slots for micro caps and four slots for hope high potential. The maximum exposure I allocate to those are 5%. You know, bigger companies 10% because that's about liquidity as well. But mate, these trends last for a while, man. If that happens, let's say, for example, I bought the SCS group, right, the sofa company. They were like literally valued. There's a lot of value in there as well. You've got to, that's what I look at initially. You know, so the growth wasn't there because there's a cost of living crisis. But they hit a level where they had 70 million in cash. Yes, they've got some lease liabilities, which every company has. But their market cap was like 55 million and they had 70 million in cash. I thought, that's nuts. And I looked at the company on their website and they really are an excellent company to work for. They care about their employees and all that stuff. And all their things on TripAdvisor are like 4.7 out of 5. They got like, I think it's 300,000 reviews and they're above 4.8. So, okay, so customers like them a lot. And they last crossed, for example, the last golden cross was in November 2020, okay, 9th of November. So that's when they last, no, sorry. 6th November 2020. Okay, so November 2020, and when it crossed the downturn, it was a year later on the 21st, and then we had the downturn of the markets, of course, 21st. So that trend lasts a year, but that was after, you know. But I think this trend will last even more. So these trends don't happen overnight. They, you know, you have to wait for a while for them to happen. When they do happen, you can generally sit in them for a long time. And when I start looking, and when it starts throwing red flags to me, is when the share price, for example, the share price in SCS Group, when it went above the 200-day moving average back in September, actually, 2020, it went above that. It didn't then come down below that 200-day moving average, like I said, for over a year. Now, when it starts hitting that 200-day moving average, you realize, oh, hang on a sec, something wrong here. The trend is breaking down. So it hasn't touched that moving average for over a year. So that is the market saying, via volume, you know, all that moves that share price is volume. You don't actually know what people are doing, buying or selling. But when you realize it's now trending, starting to trend below its 200-day moving average, and it's not done that for over a year, there's price weakness. That means there's probably there's now more net sellers than buyers pretty much coming in. So pay attention to that because that's telling you something. And then you say, okay. And that's why you've got to be sort of unemotional and say, I don't care about the company. And I've gone through this with our companies. You know, I would have I bought XP Factory at 7p. I would have gone out to 32p if I paid attention to that. But I didn't. Do you know why? Because I loved the company. I got emotionally involved. I thought, I don't care. This is going to 60-70p. I don't care. But when the market's saying something else, the market doesn't care about your opinion. It doesn't care.
No.
Listen to the market. The market says...
I know. But then I and I'm a bit like Steve, and unlike you, we're not in it the whole time, all the time, looking at stuff. And
I'd be obsessed. One of the things that take my mind off, one of the things that take my mind off the stuff that's going around is literally obsessing of an evening. I haven't done any social media for like probably a month or so. All I've been doing is screening for stocks, in between arranging funeral stuff, sending emails to people, this list of stuff. I've been looking at stocks, and that's all I do every day. Like I said, I literally, you know, at least one company I analyse on a daily basis, and I realise I can do over 300 a year. So that's enough. That's plenty.
But my take on it, and it's not just me being lazy, is that I, you know, a handful of stocks in my portfolio, and to be honest, you know, if half of them turn out to be dogs, half of them turn out to be pretty good and solid and as good as we'd hoped they would be, which I think is kind of starting to pan out, hopefully. I should be okay, you know, in the longer term. That's my wishful thinking, maybe. But that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. And people like XPF, yeah, absolutely. You know, we've seen a drop, but they had released a really great update the other week, and it's just sit and hold, and things are moving in the right direction. Polarian is an interesting one, a weird one, in that it's now below the flipping price that it dropped to on the infamous Brown Wednesday, and it's in a way, hopefully, a better stock now, because you've got FDA, we got the older Wax Hat Man.
Wax Hatchman. That sounds like a horror character, didn't it? From a horror film. Exactly. Well, here comes Wax Hatchman.
Yeah, here he comes. So in a way, the picture is rosier now. We just need, obviously, to understand the commercials of it and how that can actually come to fruition. But the price action is frustrating. But, you know,
in a way, though, Pete, do you not think it's a little bit reassuring? Because when you see like the news is all good and actually it's still not doing well, it reassures me on the rest of my portfolio, to be honest. It makes me think, okay, well, this is just a thing, isn't it? this is just what's happening. Yeah.
Well, do you know, I like Pelé, right? And I know you're saying we haven't got time, but all you need to do, essentially, right? All you need to do. And this is not, and I go through this, you know, one of the first lessons, on the website, the investment club, I look at technicals, charts, and it's not that hard to, and I show how to set up a chart, and it's not that hard, and put a moving average on. If you have one moving average, right, look at the 200-day, and literally, just look, regardless, like I said, I've seen lots of people, you know, getting frustrated by playing, and I've had people ask me about it, and they've asked me why I'm not in it. They've been frustrated, and I said, well, essentially, I love the company, but it's not an uptrend. And why am I wasting my time getting frustrated pouring money into a stock that's not in an uptrend? And if you did that, just look at that, right, and stick with that, you would save a lot of money. And then, obviously, don't overexpose yourself to it. If you are in a company that's in a downtrend, or you get into one and you realise it's in a downtrend, don't throw more money into it, because it's pointless, because you're fighting the market. No. And so, literally, if you're going to get 1% on a stock and it drops by 50%, you know, let's go through the figures. 100,000, let's say, for round figures, let's say you've got a £100,000 portfolio, right? And you put 1% into a company, not paying any attention to it whatsoever, okay? So that's what? £1,000. That's all you put into it. Mm-hmm. And it drops by 50%. You've lost 500 quid out of a £100,000 portfolio. It's not going to hurt you. You can sit on that for a while if you want. Just sit there and see what happens. If it starts to rally and starts going back in an uptrend, then you can scale in a bit more, and you realise once the trend starts, because trends are very powerful, once they start, they don't end for a while. And you can throw valuations at the window sometimes. You can put sensible valuations. They can go way above that. They can overshoot, you know, sensible valuations by a long time. So you can earn a lot more money than the brokers and all that suggest is the value of the company. So, what I'm saying is, and I see people getting frustrated putting more money, don't put more money in stocks, it's not going in the right direction. It's a completely inefficient way of allocating your capital. There's no point. No point at all.
But equally, I see, don't sell it either. So I see that just sit and hold. If the belief is that it might go to the floor because it's take Polarian, the picture is improving. It's just very, very slowly improving. And it's gutting to have got the FDA and everything sort of, and to see such a drop, because that's a bit like, well, come on. But that's the market. That's people. That's panicky private investors. Who knows? That's people. I don't know. There's some big investors in there that, as far as I'm aware, haven't sold. And let's just see how this pans out. But you just got to see it in a much longer term, bigger picture.
Yeah.
And believe that it's going to move. Whereas I get what you're doing, and I understand you've repositioned. For me, if you look at your overall portfolio value, I mean, I'm sure you've taken a hit in the past 18
years. Oh, yeah, taken a massive hit, yes. But now, do I think, like, for example, listen, I sort of walked through this. From 2009, right, to now, I've done 3,300% gain. Now, if you even start with a small figure, you've done pretty well there. In fact, it's a phenomenal gain. Largely that has been down to microcaps, but at the height, I was close to 5,000%, and so I've lost, 1,700% pretty much or whatever, because I didn't pay any attention to trends, and that's cost me a lot of money. Regardless of the stock, it's cost me a lot of money, and that's how you become a bit better. You know, I would have been out of this market largely, way before now if I just paid attention to that. So what I'm saying is, yes, what do we know about Polarian? I think it's got groundbreaking technology. From all the data out there, there's Cambridge, universities using their tech. There's, large institutions, leading institutions using their technology. They've now got FDA approval. They've now got exclusivity for 5 years. In an area that seems an unmet medical need, it's a big area, and they are, first mover advantage in this space. So I think it's going to be a great company. But right now, the market is not saying that. I don't know why this is happening. To me, there should be a rally, but it's not. Don't argue with the market. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. But until I see price confirmation, the market, you know, basically, the market is your god. Unless, unless you know, I agree with the market, not the market agrees with me. Unless you know, I go with the market. That you know, I'm not going to get in there. And I Plarion, I've got a slot right there for it in my Hope High potential stocks. And because I think it will be, you know, amazing. I've done videos and they say it could be a FTSE 100 company. It'll probably get bought out. Now, knowing my luck, you'll probably get an MRI manufacturer coming on Monday and we get £500 million offer for it.
But that's the thing, isn't it?
I'm not going to invest on that hope. Like, hope is not an investment philosophy, and you shouldn't be. And hope will get you into a lot of trouble with stocks, honestly. So, but there's plenty of opportunities. There's a scan company. How many opportunities there are? Okay, you may not get massive opportunities like that, but sometimes the money you lose chasing hope stocks. You know, that means, you know, pretty much, you know, it even out if you didn't do that anyway. So, I'd say to you boys, I would say have some big companies that pay dividends in your portfolio because you can sit on those for years and that'll compound. Those dividends repaid, reinvested, compound, and then before you know it, you are getting paid several thousand pounds a year in dividends by doing nothing, you know? But also have a fund in there as well to stabilise your portfolio. But importantly, diversify a little bit, you know, into bigger stocks and funds, and then also have a few, you know, home pipes. But my mistake was having too much leverage on microcaps. I still will have them. They'll be a quarter of my portfolio. But I'm also going to be diversified a bit more amongst other, you know, other bigger sort of sensible stocks. Business,
yeah, and with Plarion, you know, how many people are like you sitting on the sidelines now watching it? Waiting and seeing. And so we could see a massive rally on good news. What will happen to me is I'll miss it because I haven't got my eye on the ball. So I'd rather sit and hold and risk. It is a big risk that it drops and I lose, but I'm at least in it and hoping. I know it's hope, but hoping something comes along and it might be not this month, this flipping year. I don't know, but I hope so. And we see some, and one day it will. I think it will, but who knows?
It's frustrating. It is frustrating.
But I get your strategy and I understand that. The only thing then I would say about the way you're positioning your portfolio is you're not, with a lot of those big stocks, I get the compounding thing, dividend and all that, you're not going to see necessarily huge capital gain, are you?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The losses I've taken on microcaps, hoping to get multi-buyers, it would even out. You know, if I can get, so if I, from where I am now, if I can get, like, you know, 20-30% a year off my portfolio, I'll do very well. And also on top of that, that's the capital upside. On top of that, your dividends, I'll do very well. You know, you put 20% compound year in year for like 10 years, and you're going to do very, very well. And, you know, most people don't achieve that. So, it's nice to have a bit of, you know, diversification there and also know that the companies are in. For example, right, a company I bought, look at ASOS and Future PLC, two companies are taking a bit of a hammer. Future is an amazing company. They do, you know, media websites, advertising. They got their own proprietary system that basically squeezes advertisers for more bang for the buck. Hugely cash generative. They grow like at 40% top line, even when they're a £2 billion company. They are one of those companies that I've always wanted to own a bit of. And even when I talk about Gfinity wanted to be this company, of course. And in fact, there's board crossover. This is the model they wanted. So hang on, why buy the one that's trying to be it when you can buy it? It's come down from 40 quid to 15 quid. You know, I think, it's probably going to get back. I mean, the why it's fallen off is, of course, there's a recession, worry about, you know, people pulling advertising rates. But now that's priced in. And so I've been watching this for months and months and months. And finally, the share price broke up above a 125 moving average. It hasn't done that. Last time I did that was on the downtrend in like December 2021. So, you know, over a year ago. And I've been watching this for ages. I put markets on the chart. I got so many alerts on it that hit me. And so I bought it a little bit early. I bought it when it just broke the 125, and then it went sideways for a while. And then all of a sudden, a couple of days later, it did like 12%, and it went through the 200-day moving average. And then yesterday, that was on Thursday, and then yesterday went up again by another 2%. And so now I'm in profit on that. I've only got 2% of my portfolio into it. Is it 2 or 3? I'll check. But that's how I'll play it. I'll now not allocate any more unless it keeps rising, because I'm not going to put more money into a company. 3% of my portfolio is in that. But so I'm not going to keep, you know, I'm not going to allocate more money to stock that isn't performing. So that's the way you do it. You only allocate money to, so you can start out by having lots of companies that are very good, but unless they start performing, I'm not going to just chuck money into it. I believe this company can do very well. It's not about my thoughts. It's not what the market thinks. Like I said, I've seen companies, I've two companies, you know, and I think one is a lot better than the other. It depends on a lot of metrics, but the one I don't think is as good can rally a lot faster and turn you a lot more, because you don't know. There's certain things going on with, you know, capital structure, who owns the stock, who's selling the stock. So, you know, that can happen. You never know. So that's why I do it. So basically, it's backing the winners. You know, it's not backing the losers or the underperformers. It's backing the winners. And so that's why, and it's phenomenal. I think 14 out of 14 I'm in profit on. And just looking at the trends, and also only scaling in to companies that are performing, you know. So,
going back to my thing, you won't necessarily get back to the levels your portfolio was at 18 months ago.
Oh, I will, yeah. I'll smash it, Because I'm still going to.
What sort of time frame?
I don't know, next 3 to 5 years, I suspect.
Yeah, okay.
I've done the math on it. I've looked at, you know, the cost of just the having math. All, yeah, the math of having all microcaps, how much that can cost you when they take a massive hit. Because, you know, you if you back all microcaps, one of them or two of them can fall out of bed and you drop 50-60%, and you don't have that with big caps. So what you're missing out on that side, you're gaining more. So, you know, so even though I had some big winners in the microcap space, I had some big losers as well. So it knocked my portfolio. And I said, over the last year, having microcaps has hit me massively. That wouldn't have happened with bigger caps. And also if I'd paid attention to trends.
Yeah. And ironically, me and Steve, not I on the ball all the time looking at it like you are, we would be better off having a portfolio like yours with bigger, safer companies than these blue sky stocks that we're in. But we are where we are.
I am gonna transition though, Pete, though. I'm gonna, once these stocks eventually come back in next year after, whatever, I am gonna start slowly pulling out and doing that.
Well, Steve, but think about this, right? So, I mean, companies, like I said, we own a dog, right? I got a pet at home quite a few times, right? And quite a lot. And they're very nice, helpful staff. You go in there, it's always busy. There's always dogs and people with their dogs in there and stuff like that. It's just a nice atmosphere and done very well. You know, you got loyalty schemes and all this stuff. And I've been looking at it for a while, Pets at Home. I thought, who else competes for them, really? You know, if you're going to get pet stuff, they're the number one. They are the number one. You know, there's a little local shop that's, you know, a lot of stuff crammed into a shop. You've got these big supermarket-style Pets at Home thing, and I just looked at the update recently, and they're down to, they pay, like, let me just scroll up, I'll tell you what they pay, right, dividend wise. So they pay, you know, a 3.6% dividend, right? So you're getting that. If it goes sideways, you're getting that anyway. You know, they literally they got cash of 45 million. They made 144 million in operating profit last year, right? The operating profit went up by 52%. Okay, in the last 6 months, the top line has only grown by 7%, but they are £1.23 billion company, not operating profit, but a knock. But that's worrying about, you know, there's been a reorganisation there. But I looked at the update, and even that their puppy club and kitten club things, which, you know, could be recurring revenue, and their vets, they're growing phenomenally. They're signing up 23,000 people a week on their puppy club. 23,000 a week? That's phenomenal. And you realise they are by far the market leader. Now, I'm looking at market leaders. Future is by far the market leader pretty much in advertising. Rightmove I bought is by far the market leader in property portals. You know, they've got huge margins, you know, massively cash generative. And I thought, why not buy the best in class here? They've taken a knock by the best in class. And they are amazing businesses, you know, really good businesses.
I own a few dogs that are in my portfolio.
I would advise, I mean, things like that. It's only the start. Future's just broken out. You know, Future PLC just broke out. Pets at Home, like, it had a bit of a breakout. I mean, it was £5, it's now £3.76. It went down to £2.75, but it's just broken out. But it's things like that, you just have to wait for a couple of down days. There will be. And the problem is, you know, all recessions, this has happened pretty much in all recessions, right? The microcaps go in first, they sell off first, and they come out first, generally.
Yep.
That hasn't happened this time. Any idea why that hasn't happened?
Well, fear.
Well, I've been looking at, you know, the moving averages on all the indices. Like FTSE 100 has hardly taken a dip. FTSE 250 is more domestic, you know, growing companies.
Well, FTSE 100 hit a record,
yesterday. Yeah, it reached a high, yeah. FTSE 250 did take a dip, a bit like the AIM All Share Index, right? Same as the FTSE 350. But I'm looking, and in fact, let me get up here. But I was looking at stocks that have gone over the 200-day moving average in those indices, and for the FTSE 100, about 60 stocks are above 200-day moving average, so 60% in uptrend, pretty much. FTSE 250 now, in the last 2 months, they have had a majority of stocks now over 50% above 200-day moving average. Last time I looked at the AIM All Share Index, you had about 35% above the 200-day moving average. And I thought, hang on, what's going on here? And I realise it's because of interest rates, essentially. As you know, if you're on AIM, a lot of companies are pre-revenue or they have revenue or they're loss-making, you know? So they have to sometimes go to the market to raise capital. Capital isn't easy to raise at the moment. It's really hard. If you do a placing, if you can get a placing away, a lot of companies have pulled placings because they can't get money at a decent, it's too much of a discount, or they try to get debt finance, they can't do it because it's too expensive. So I believe that's one of the reasons why AIM is underperforming, because the cost of capital is so high and many companies on AIM need to acquire, you know, funds in some way. So I think that's why it's underperforming. That will change as interest rates go down, and I think we're seeing the peak now, or we're close to the peak of interest rates. That's why we had a rally recently. But it's lagging. And I thought, why am I going to sit there on a lagging, you know, with my portfolio full of stocks that are lagging when there are performers out there? I'm not going to do that. So it's literally, look for performers, you know, go for performers.
Right? Are there any good funds out there that pay a good dividend out? Like, I know there's loads, but are there any that are kind of sticking out? Because I'm in the Vanguard 100% equity one, but I'm just wondering about dividend paying ones.
And what's probably
the best one you think?
Yeah, the one is in fact it's an ETF, which means it's traded as a stock. But you know, BlackRock and Vanguard are the two biggest fund managers in the world. Yeah. BlackRock does IUKD. That's a ticker. Have you put that in?
Oh, we were in that before, actually. Yeah.
And that pays about 4% or 5%. And literally, it's as safe as you can get, because it's got about sort of, I think it is a FTSE 100 dividend company. So it holds all the big stocks. So that straight away, you are diversifying to 100 companies or, you know, companies that pay dividends. And why do they pay dividends? Because they're cash generating and they distribute, you know, excess profits to their shareholders. So already that's why we say dividend paying companies are good companies, because most companies, if they've got a decent board, they will not be paying dividends if they're not making decent profits. You know, so
IUKD?
IUKD, yes. So, but all I'd say is we've done it wrong. Largely, it's my fault, I admit. You know, we've gone too much, or I've gone too much into macro caps because I've been greedy. So that's where outsized gains can happen, but also it's where outsized losses can happen. Now, you know, so if you've been a bit more selective on the micro cap space and diversify a bit more, generally, but it's never too late to learn. It's never too late. Listen, boys, you've got like, 10 years left of your life yet.
Yeah. Maybe. The other thing as well, and this is what I know this for a fact because of history, you know, this whole thing is cyclical. And like, it's interesting, Steve, going, you know, when these stocks recover, you know, it's an if, isn't it? If these stocks recover, it's going to transition out. But you know what? You know, when you're on a bull market and you're in a bull market, and you go, why would I sell now? And you don't, and you won't transition out because it will feel like it's going to the moon. And even though you think you're going to transition out, you probably won't, because it will be like, no, I'll keep going on this one because it's on a good one. I don't know. But
But I would say for you guys, more passive investors, I would have, and think about this, best-in-class companies. When you think of any industry and you think, okay, what's the go-to company in that industry? And like I said, you know, if you're looking for a house, it's pretty much Rightmove, isn't it? You know, if you're looking around, that's the one that pops up. Yeah. You know, if you're going to feed your pet, where do you go? It's pretty much Pets at Home. I even went to Blackwood, the one in Blackwood where my father lives. You know, lovely people in there, dogs, puppies in there. And you walk around, it's busy. And, you know, it's pretty much the same nice, airy layout as the one down by us. And you think, yeah, do you know what? And you look at the figures they're doing. And you think, you're not going to blow the roof off with that. But you hold that company for years and you start at this level and only scaling in slowly. And you'll get a nice return from that over time.
I think, you know. Yeah, and, you know, we're not getting any younger and all that. And so I think additional money that I'll put into my ISA as and when, I will look to invest in these types of companies. And in a way, it will balance out. So I'll keep the ones, my blue sky stocks. Like I've said, some are going to be dogs. Some hopefully are going to hit the heights, the big time. Who knows? But it will balance out by adding stocks with fresh money into the portfolio that goes into safer stocks. I'll have a balanced portfolio over the next couple of years. And who knows where the...
But don't go big either. Like, pay those, right?
Scale in.
Yeah, yeah. So literally, If you put, like, Steve, for example, if you've got 1% of your total portfolio, it's not a lot, or even 2%, right? And you want to go with, for example, like the Future PLC has just started. It's like I said, it's not even, it's 17 quid. It was like, where was it previously? It's good feature up here. And it's not going to be, you know, straight up gain. The macro environment is still not, you know, kind to businesses. People are pulling advertising spend. So futures updates, they're not going to be rosy. They're going to probably not be as good as last year, you know, but they'll come through that. And so there's plenty of time scaling. So they'll have times where they release results maybe and it'll take a little bit of dip. But it's like now it's £17.49, right? They were at 40 quid. You know, or 38 quid. Mm. So there's a double there over the next, and they've become better company. They've acquired companies and make them a better company. They're more efficient. So they're now, I think it was like they're now trading on about 7 times operating profit. They were trading on about 16, 17 times operating profit. They'll get back to that because they're even, and they'll have more operating profit because they're better and bigger company than they were 2 years ago. So if you put like 1-2% in that, it's not going to break the bank, even if it drops by 20%. Doesn't matter. You know, and a company like that probably won't drop by 20% anyway. But so if you look at it from that thing, how much can I lose here? You know, how much pain am I going to take? Well, if you put 2% in, so let's look at look at the £100,000 portfolio, but two grand in, right? And even if it drops by 50%, okay, a grand down, but they're still going to pay you a little dividend. And also, you can wait. It's like, it's not like they don't have cash. It's not, they're not generating, it's still profitable, you know, so, but it's not going to drop by 50%. You know, it's not.
Of your 15 stocks you're in now, I suppose they all have quite different risk profiles, but which ones are you kind of most excited about in terms of, you think, are the most undervalued and have the greatest chance of growth in the coming years?
I like Future. I've just taken a position in ASOS because ASOS was the stock market darling. It's like whenever you see articles about AIM, how well can you do on AIM? Well, it's indices of good and bad. You know, you can do very well or very bad. ASOS was the champion stock they always mentioned, saying if you'd invested £1,000 in ASOS when it listed, you'd have £166,000 now. That's how well it did, you know? Now, it's fallen 90%. 90%. Why I think, I don't think it'll get back to maybe, I have no idea, it may do. I don't think it'll get back to its previous highs, but it's still almost like that and Boohoo, pretty much the market leaders in online fashion, you know? And so I think it'll go a long way. So I'm quite excited to see how far that'll go. I think a lot of people will be hyped because all the selling's come out and it's started now a little uptrend. So ASC is ticker there. If you look at it, it literally has come from 56 or 60 quid it hit and now it's less than £10, right? So even if that doubles, that's quite exciting. From if it goes 18 quid, but I think it can go further than that because they've just come up with the trading update saying that for the first time ever, pretty much, in the last five to ten years, they made a loss last year, all right? And that was because of supply chain problems, cost of living going up, and their margins aren't big, so they do volume, and so that hits their margin. They made a small loss, but they got cash, they got bank facilities there as well. Now they say, for this year, they've cut out £300 million worth of costs from the business. So these times make companies more efficient. They say, even though H1 is going to be loss-making this year, H2 is going to be profitable, and they will be profitable over the entire year. So to me, they're not burning any more cash. They've sold off by 90%. There's some upside there, you know, alone. I think it's good. But I'm also excited about, you know, small caps. I'm excited about XP Factory. It's still my biggest holding, XP Factory, you know? It takes about like 11% of my portfolio. That's the biggest holding yacht. Argentex is my second biggest holding. True Feeling is very exciting. It's going through. I do like this. I bought Pull Big Pharma as well. Very exciting. So smaller cap companies tend to be a bit more exciting, but doesn't mean you should go crazy on it, you know? But because, like I said, the downside can be very painful.
Yeah.
Unless they start performing, I'm not putting any more money into it. It's like, why would you do that?
No.
You know, why would you pay for something that doesn't work and then, you know, buy another one or whatever, you know, thinking, oh, that doesn't work. I'll buy exactly the same thing again. It's not working again. Yeah. So, buy another one, just in case. No, you don't do that. If you start performing, you're happy with it. Okay, buy some more, you know, that's it. So, but I would advise you to slowly, and you've got plenty of time because we've got a recovery here. It's not going to be fast and quick because there's still high interest rates out there. The cost of living is still quite high. A lot of companies, you know, people are not going to start spending like crazy now, are they? All companies, because the Bank of England said, we're towards the peak of interest rates. Yeah, but we're at high interest, 4%. That's going to affect a lot of people. And so Yeah, there's plenty of time. We are in a recovery phase, but I would think slow. I mean, you don't have to do the transition anywhere near as fast as I did, but I like that.
No.
If I get something in my head, I just have to go for
yes.
it. Yes. And I thought,
I think we know that.
Yeah. I thought, am I going to sit there on these companies, hoping they come around the next 2-3 years? Or am I going to go with something I think is working out? And so I just said, okay. And I'm going to go with it. And I just, you know, make the cut, do it, feel the pain, build and go forward. And I said, I think it was 5 years ago, I came up with this sort of five sections of stocks, you know, and I put a spreadsheet up different. And I didn't stick to it, and I should have stuck to it back then.
But I said like you.
Yeah, I know, but this time I will stick to it because the pain has been too much not to learn from, you know. And my portfolio pain has hurt me so much. I've been, but like I said, it's still done very, very well, you know. So it's not.
I'm excited, intrigued, slightly scared, you know, about what the next 12, 24 months holds. But, you know, we'll see.
But do you know what? I'm not saying it's foolproof, but if you don't allocate to companies not performing, you can't get hurt.
Mm.
You only get hurt when you get too excited about a company, hoping that something will happen with it. You put too much money into it and it goes against you and you don't get out. So if you start off first and foremost by going very small, go very small, okay? And then you can't get hurt. You know, if you do get hurt, it'd only be a little, you know, paper cut, you know. It'd not be your arm being chopped off. So that's what I'm saying. Just, you know, if you like these, you know, big companies, you know, they are good companies, you know. I've just bought Money Supermarket. It's a great company. It's that the margins are good. Everything's good. They've taken a big hit because of the energy, because the government are paying for their people's energies. One of their main offerings is switch people comparing energy prices between different things. They took a massive hit because of that. But the last couple of trading updates, they're doing very well. And in fact, they're an amazing company, and I really like portals like that. Rightmove, they are websites basically. They don't own any stock. They're very capital light, so they don't own anything apart from the website. Of course, it takes a bit of developing and all that stuff, and still it costs a bit. But it's not like they have to build, even though like house builders, it's not like they're building houses or they've got a shop full of stock and stuff. They don't.
Yeah,
virtual.
And also, was it Boomin? I think they came to the market, and I think they've already gone under, haven't they, or something? Some competitors.
Yeah.
That, you know, people fail to compete with them. Yeah. One thing, though, I would say about the whole lesson learned, you know, microcaps and stuff we've done in the last couple of years, we broke our own rules, or certainly I did, in doing some basic stuff in that, you know, if a stock doubles, sell half, you know, de-risk. And I just didn't do that. People like that. Yeah. I should have done that. And then I might would get back into it if it dropped back and the pictures start to look good again, get back into it. But those fundamental rules of doing that, I definitely didn't do.
Agree. And in a bull market, that happens. People think bull market, they think it's going to the moon. In a bear market, people think it's going to the floor, and that's why you get those things. Like, for example, Money Supermarket, almost paying a 5% dividend, you know, their gross margin 68%, their operating margin 23%, which is very good. You know, I mean, I like operating margins above 10, and they're 23%. You know, net margin 17%. So 17 is going to the bottom line of cash. That's very good. Money Supermarket, they've had a bit of a rocket in the last few years. But things like that, it'll come back. Things like that, you know, worth getting into, because they are good companies, you know. So anyway, Steve's got to go. Where are you off, Steve?
That's rugby, isn't it? So capital OBs.
Oh, yeah, Steve's playing rugby for Wales today.
What position are you playing?
Wing.
Yeah, he's
got a winger now.
Steve is fast.
I've always been wing.
I remember him racing Gavin once. Gavin, my mate, who played for Wales on the wing. He's fast, Gavin is, you know. He literally, Welsh youth, he played for, and we were at Cheltenham coming back from the horse race, and Steve said, I've been quite fast. And like, you won't beat Gavin. And then Steve beat him. And then he said, what? What's going on there? I've never known anyone beat Gavin. He played for Wales on the wing. And to be fair, Gavin was 10 years older than Steve, so maybe that came into it a little bit.
And hammered.
That's what it was, yeah.
He could barely walk.
He had drunk about 15 Guinnesses, so maybe that's, you know, when you get people lined up as a starting race, you don't get 15 Guinnesses, but no.
Do you know what? A very similar thing this week, actually, or last week, when I was filming sports for one of the universities, and they were doing beep tests, and they were like, the producer's like, do you think you could run alongside the girls doing the beep tests? And I was like, yeah, I'll probably run faster than them. They're like, no, you won't. I literally ran faster than them with a camera rig on me.
Really?
Yeah.
Steve, you should have done something with that. You could have been one of the world. You could have beaten Ben Johnson. No, John Benson. What's his name? Ben Johnson.
Yeah, Ben. Drugs.
You could be in the new. What's the guy? That does the thing. The tall guy.
You say Bolt.
Yeah. Steve Martin is Usain Bolt. That'd be hilarious. It's like that picture, isn't it? I don't know if it's a fake one. There's a sprint somewhere being filmed, and there's a cameraman running alongside them filming the sprinters. Yeah. 100 meters. That could be Steve. Yeah.
The guy doing the camera work is the fastest.
Yeah, he wins. He's in front of Usain Bolt filming him. I know. Right. Cheers, lads. Have a nice weekend. Good luck to Wales. England are playing. When are they playing today? Tonight.
England today. Yeah.
Against Scotland, isn't it?
At home. Yeah.
Oh, here we are. Big day. Hi, lads. All right. Bye bye.
Okay. No matter.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter, and Steve. The contents of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.